Shabbat Shalom. I'd like to welcome everyone here and those that are watching via live stream. Welcome to this season of Sukkot. I hope that it is a joyful one for each and every one of you and for your families. It is certainly something we're growing into. It is counterculture. And I know that all of our friends and family and even the church at large thinks we're a little bit half-baked celebrating the birth of Jesus in the fall. But that's the truth. The theological construct, backdrop for his birth is actually Sukkot, tabernacles, when he came and pitched a human tabernacle and dwelt among us. This is the season of celebrating his birth. This is the roots of our faith. And we are returning to the roots of our faith, to the Jewish roots of our faith. And many people in many, many different denominations are joining us on that journey as we move back to the fabric and texture of our faith. So we're really excited about this. And I can tell you right now that I'm more jazzed than ever. I used to feel awkward, and now I don't. I love it. I just think other people that wait till December, I'm thinking, what are you doing? That's kind of odd. So, you know, it's like a different experience for me now that I've been doing this for a couple decades. And we're really super excited about it. Every year, this is one of my favorite seasons to enter into. So I hope, again, that this is a joyful and blessed week for you and your families. So, today I want to talk about tabernacles, the eighth day, and the new Jerusalem. This is like part four in a series, even though it's not a series. Thematically, it is Sukkot, and these five teachings I've already done are centered in this holy day. So I hope you're able to get those. Some of them are on our YouTube channel. Some are on our iTunes place that we do a lot of podcasts. So hopefully you can get those and enjoy those. You're not going to find these teachings hardly anywhere. The Messianic movement's a very small movement in contradistinction to the church. And so it's hard to find these type of teachings. Don't take them for granted. Get into them. Listen to them. Get it into your heart and share it with your friends and neighbors. This is your job. This is what you're called to. You're the forerunners. You're riding the crest of the wave. I'm so glad to be a part of a community that's riding that wave. And not everyone's called to do that, but I'll tell you what, those that are here, you're called to do that. So thank you for your participation in this. So tabernacles, the eighth day in the New Jerusalem. So we're looking into the virgin birth of Jesus, of course. And the virgin birth of Jesus is and was the initial fulfillment of the fall holy week called Sukkot, Hebrew, translated tabernacles or booths. The final or consummate fulfillment takes place after he returns. It is in the age to come that the ultimate fullness of the festival of tabernacles will manifest. This is the time in which the new heavens and the new earth come into being. Along with these comes the new Jerusalem. Salvation will be completed and perfected once and for all who have believed in Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ. We shall then see the eternal and glorious God face to face and will behold his form. And the tabernacle of God will be among men in its truest and fullest sense. This is known as the cosmic eighth day of creation. You have the cosmic days of creation, Genesis chapter 1, the seven cosmic days of creation before we start counting days in a solar human history context. So you have the seven cosmic days. Well, there's actually an eighth cosmic day. It's part of the mystery of Sukkot. 7 days you'll celebrate this festival of Sukkot. And then you'll add on to those one extra day called what? Moses said, called the eighth day. It's the final day of the holy days on the annual calendar that God has given us, the eighth day. Hardly anything is said about it. In fact, it's not really understood until you get all the way down into the book of Revelation in the last two chapters. It's the eighth day that's known as the cosmic day, the day of new beginnings, the day that never ends. It is the eternal age to come, the final age. It's going to be an amazing era that never ends that we participate in. That's the eighth day. So let's jump into the book of Revelation. We're going to work down through at least chapter 21. We're going to try to do one chapter today in the teaching, and we're going to connect these ideas of tabernacles, the eighth day, and the new Jerusalem. And again, this is a very important part of eschatology, which simply means end time events. So we're looking at the final order of things in the final age. This is eschatology. In fact, it's a Jewish eschatology. It's a messianic Jewish eschatology. Quite a bit different than what you'll find in most denominations. Most denominations have divorced themselves from their Jewish roots, and as a result, they've had to repackage a lot of the ideas, but then, of course, stripped of any Jewish background, which then minimizes much of the revelation associated with those ideas. So we're going to look at more of a Jewish eschatology and the backdrop, of course, being a Jewish backdrop in order to understand this chapter. So some of you are going to be bothered by this. Some of us are bothered by this Jewish element within our faith. That's called the spirit of anti-Semitism. It's not rational, but it's powerful. And some of us struggle with it. Hopefully, we'll free ourselves of that. As we work down through this passage, if we're bothered, all we need to do is repent and ask God to change our hearts concerning his Jewish people, his Jewish son, and his Jewish city, Jerusalem. We either try to divorce ourselves or we try to take their place. And both are wrongheaded, okay? We need to find our place and join them in this great plan of salvation. Revelation 21:1, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. This is post-resurrection. This is post-millennium, regardless of how you define that. It doesn't matter. This is at the end of the age after the great white throne judgment. This is eschatology in its final workings, if you will. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. This is a new creation that's breaking forth. The cosmic Shabbat, the cosmic Sabbath, day seven of the cosmic week of creation, has continued on since that time. We're still in the seventh day. The writers, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, attest to the fact that we are currently living in the seventh day of creation. It's the cosmic day. It's not characterized by 24 hours. It's a long period of time called Yom, a day. And the word Yom in Hebrew has four different nuances. A part of a day, a whole day, a time much longer than a day, an indeterminate amount of years that can span even millions or billions, if you will. That's the word in the Hebrew that's used to describe those elements of time. So we're still in the seventh day. God is still resting. God's not creating anymore. That's why you see no new speciation. It all stopped at the close of the sixth day. In fact, you know what we see now from that point on? In the seventh cosmic day where God is resting, extinction, extinction, extinction of species. And nothing new to replace it. Because God isn't. He ceased his work of creation. He's resting. The only thing he's doing now is the work of redemption, which is not the same as physically creating new things out of nothing. This is the day of salvation. Which day? Every day. Every day. From the beginning of the seventh day to the close of the seventh day is the day of salvation. We can enter his rest through faith in Jesus and experience his grace and forgiveness now in the seventh day. But the seventh day is coming to a close, and there's going to be one more day, one more cosmic day, the eighth day, the day of new beginnings. And it's in and on that eighth day that we have a new creation that takes place. It's like God, John's, says, okay, I'm rested. Not that he needed a rest, okay? But he's ready. Now look, people are yawning. That was so good. Thank you. That was almost on cue. Okay. Didn't mean to trigger that. So this idea that God is going to cease his rest and begin creating again is tied into the eighth day where he begins to create again. But it's the eighth day. It's the day of new beginnings. There's no more days after that. It's the eternal age. There's no more cosmic days. It is an endless, perfect kingdom, creation, which will never end. This is the eighth day. So this is very important for us to understand this new beginning aspect of the number eight tied into the eighth day. It's when the new heavens and the new earth are created for us. It's not a renewal, it's an actual recreation. The physics of the universe will be different. Do you know the specific laws of physics right now in our current universe are such that whenever mass gets to a certain size, it always, always becomes a sphere, not a perfect sphere. But due to the physics of the universe, mass actually takes that form at a given point. The New Jerusalem far exceeds the mass that at a point will actually become a sphere, but yet it's a cube. Why? Because in the new age to come, the physics is different. Even the physics of the universe changes. It's a totally different creation. The same yet different. It's not a renewal. It's an actual new creation. Verse 2. And I saw the holy city. I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. The holy city on earth, the city of God, is called what? On earth. What's it called? Jerusalem. The city of God is Jerusalem. Always has been, always will be. There's a new earth and a new heavens. It's recreated. It's a recreated earth, much like this earth, but immortalized and glorified. The heavens, immortalized and glorified. And the city of Jerusalem on earth becomes immortalized and glorified in the age to come. It's the same city of God, same people of God. It's Jerusalem, immortalized and glorified. Verse 3, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, didn't say, and there was a voice from the throne, right? It says, I heard a loud voice, a booming voice. In other words, something's being emphasized here. It said, behold, the tabernacle of God, the sukkah of God, is among men, and I will dwell among them. That phrase, I will dwell among them, is found in Exodus, where God first says, build me a tabernacle. Make me a big tabernacle, put it in the middle of all the little tabernacles, because I'm going to dwell with my people. I will dwell among my people. And now we see the fullness coming to pass in the age to come, where God says, behold, the tabernacle of God is among men. I will dwell among them. They shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. This is the consummation of Sukkot. In Jesus' birth, we have the initial fulfillment. This is the consummate fulfillment. Inauguration in his birth, consummation when he returns and brings us into the age to come. Verse 4. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will no longer be any death. There will no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. There's a time coming in which every memory that stirs up pain in our hearts will no longer touch our hearts. Everything that ever happened to us, everything that was ever done to us, everything we've ever done to someone else will no longer hurt and disturb us. That's going to be an amazing time. That's going to be an amazing time. I've been a believer since I was 18 years old. Decades of faith in Jesus. I still have memories that create pain in my heart to this very day. Not as much pain as they used to create, but still pain. And I have to bring that to the feet of the cross. I have to bring those memories to the feet of the cross, and I have to find God's grace in that in order to get beyond that pain and move back to a place of joy and peace. There's coming a time in which those memories will no longer do that, no longer have any power over me or you. This is the age to come, the age of perfection. He says, I'm going to wipe away all their tears. No more crying, no more pain. The first things have passed away. There are people I don't care to see today. There are people that if they came in here today, it would be very disruptive in my soul. It would anger me. People in the past who have wounded me deeply. That there's times that I just kind of still want to hurt them. In that day, when I see them, no longer will there be any pain, any anger. In fact, I want to just hug them. God is able to work all those things out. This is the day and an age in which all things are reconciled and we'll be at peace, full of joy, like never before. We have our own inauguration of peace and joy that's going to be consummated when he returns and changes our hearts forever. It's going to be an amazing time that we come into. This is a post-second coming resurrection context. It's the final things after the great white throne judgment. Verse 5. And he who sits on the throne said, Behold, I am making all things new. And he said, Write, for these words are faithful and true. I'm making all things new. It's the cosmic eighth day. I'm going to make a new creation, a new heavens, and a new earth. It's going to be much greater than the first one. So how long will that take? How long will it take to make a better and more perfect universe, earth, and Jerusalem? Well, here's a question. How long did the first one take? Six what? 6 days. How long is 6 days? Yom. It can be less than 24 hours. 24 hours are much greater than 20. Who knows? What we do know is this. God's going to be creating again. And this creation will supersede this one that we're currently in. It's going to be an amazing creation. Maybe, just maybe, you and I will join him and co-create the new heavens and the new earth. Just an idea. Revelation 21:6. Then he said to me, It is done. I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of water of life without cost. Saved by grace through faith. This is the gift of God, right? No cost to you, much cost to him, but free to us in Jesus. This is the grace of God. Then in verse 7, it shifts gears a little bit, and it almost appears to be contradictory. It says, He who overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. So who is it that overcomes? Do we get it because we overcome, or do we get it by grace through faith in Jesus? Actually, what it's saying is this. It's by grace through faith in Jesus. And those who truly believe in Jesus are the ones that are empowered by the Holy Spirit to overcome. True believers always overcome because the grace and power of God that saves them is also available to overcome. And we don't overcome overnight. It's a lifelong process of overcoming our fears and our pain and our challenges. But in Him, we truly are overcomers. It's in the face of oppression. It's in the face of trials and tribulations, persecution, that we do not compromise nor give up. To overcome means to stand against all of that and continue to believe in spite of what's happening. Doesn't matter what's happening. Think of Job and all that he went through. Most of us will not go through what a Job went through. And Job even says at the end, though he slays me, still yet will I trust in him. Job was an overcomer. But I believe God gave him that ability to say those very words and believe those very things. This comes to us by the grace of God. Verse 8, for the cowardly and the unbelieving and the abominable, murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars will have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. First death comes to everyone. Everyone's going to die. Believers and unbelievers alike. Everyone dies. Jesus didn't die so that you wouldn't die. Jesus died so that you wouldn't die the second death. The first death comes to everyone. In fact, it's temporary. It's temporary. That's why Jesus calls it sleep. It's like you're sleeping. Why? Because you're going to wake up. We call that the resurrection. Everyone participates in the resurrection. Believers and non-believers. Everyone's resurrected. First death, first resurrection. That comes to everyone. It's the second death that we're spared from. When he died on the cross, he spared us from the second death. The permanent, wrathful, horrifying death in the lake of fire. This is what we are being spared from. Those who are afraid to stand with or for Jesus are called cowards. They chose the path of least resistance in this world in order to escape temporary hardship. They joined the world in embracing the ways of this world and now will suffer an eternal, irreversible fate of damnation and annihilation in the lake of fire. This is rightfully called the second death because it's final, it's permanent, it's an irreversible death of their body and souls. Remember Jesus? He said, don't fear those who can kill your body only. You need to fear him who can kill both your body and soul, referring to the lake of fire. This is very disturbing for all of us, right? And it's mostly disturbing for those who want a universalism where everyone ultimately gets saved and goes to heaven. That's the pop theology of the day. It's in all of our movies. Everyone gets saved. It's a good story ending for all of humanity. See, universalism posits the idea that God's love is so great that he would never send anyone to hell. Well, guess what? God's love is so great that he wouldn't send anyone to hell. His love's so great, he lets you choose to go to hell. If you end up in hell, it's because you chose that. You broke his heart, but he honored your own free will in your own choice to go to hell. And that's very, very sad. But it absolutely shows us that universalism is unattainable within the scriptures. Some even go so far as to say that Satan's going to be saved ultimately too. Even Satan and the fallen angels will be reconciled in the end. People, I'm telling you right now, forget the movies. Read the Jewish eschatology of chapter 20 and 21 of Revelation. Set your hearts free. Learn to fear the Lord again. Learn to realize how great the cost of our redemption is. learn about the great cost should we neglect or reject that salvation in terms of the lake of fire. So, I often think about this. Why would anyone not want to be saved in light of this? Why would anyone put it off in light of this, in light of the lake of fire? Man, it makes no sense to me. Jesus said that the kingdom of God is here and that people are entering it forcefully. They're breaking forth into the kingdom with violence. What, how does that picture even reconcile with what's taking place? You know, the shepherd and the sheep. This is what took place usually at night. The shepherd would bring the sheep up against a high part of the hill. Maybe there's some rocks against the hill in the backdrop. But he would bring them in, and he would put up some rocks, not very high, because sheep are, you know, pretty cozy together behind a little fence. But he would build a little rock fence and hem them in against the hill. And they would all be like bunched up together in the dark. And they like that because they know there's predators. And then the shepherd protects the sheep in the night. By morning, when the sun comes up and it starts to get light, those sheep want to get out in the pasture. They want to get out in the open and far away from each other. They're done being cozy. So what the shepherd does is he goes and he pulls a couple of the rocks out and creates a little opening, and then he gets out of the way. I mean, when he's basically opening that up, he gets out of the way because the sheep, as soon as one can fit through, as soon as one can make it through, they bolt. It's like a stampede, and they come breaking through, and they'll knock several other rocks out of the way and open that gate further and further as they force themselves into the pasture. Jesus takes that imagery and says, that's my kingdom. When people begin to realize the glory of my kingdom and the hell that awaits them, they will bolt and force their way into my kingdom. That's a great picture. I think if people understood the gospel and what God is offering us in his kingdom and what awaits us if we remain outside, we, like those sheep, would burst forth with all of our strength, fighting and clawing and knocking other people out of the way to get in first. Yeah, that's what we need. That's the awakening that we need. Let's talk about the bride of Messiah. Revelation 21, verse 9. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me, saying, come, here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. Now this is post-marriage. This is the marriage feast of the Lamb that already took place earlier in the chapters. And so the marriage feast is taking place, the banquet, and now they've moved forward, and now the Messiah has a wife. He's married a people. So this is the bride of Messiah. This is the bride of the Lamb who is the Messiah. Verse 10, and he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. Now note well, it is Jerusalem and not Mecca of the Muslims, nor is it Salt Lake City of the Mormons, nor is it Rome of the Christians. It's Jerusalem of the Jews. Why? Because God chose the Jews to be his people. Salvation, Jesus said, is of the Jews. And the Lamb, who is the husband of his people, is in fact Jesus the Jew. He's the Lion of the tribe of Judah. He's coming back as the Lion of the tribe of Judah. He's still Jesus the Jew. He will always be Jesus the Jew. We think in terms of the future, the age to come, as being stripped of anything that's Jewish. Somehow, I guess that makes us feel better. It's not true. Actually, all of that gets intensified. Salvation is of the Jews. To the Jew first, as Paul says, and also to the Gentiles. Verses 11 and 12. Having the glory of God, her brilliance was like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper. It had a great and high wall with 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and names were written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. Every gate of this glorified, eternal, and indestructible Jewish city is, in fact, a Jewish gate. A very Jewish city with Jewish gates. I often think of the church fathers as represented in Ignatius and Justin Martyr and Barnabas. They're going to have a really difficult time in that day. They have to work through a lot of things. They probably run around the city looking for the Gentile gate. I'm not going through any Jewish gate, you know? There was so much anti-Semitism in the church fathers, it's unbelievable. That's where most of the church picks it up. No one gets into the Jewish city without going through a Jewish gate. Salvation is of the Jews. Does that bother you? God chose the Jews, and through the Jews is saving all the nations. And the Jewish people have carried the burden of that baseless hatred, of that anti-Semitism, who have suffered in every generation. Are the ones that are exalted and rewarded in the age to come with their names above the 12 gates of the city. Verses 13 and 14. There were three gates on the east, three gates on the north, three gates on the south, and three gates on the west. And the wall of the city had 12 foundational stones. And on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And guess what? These 12 apostles are also Jewish. They're also Jewish. Salvation is of the Jews. Keep in mind, it's Paul who says to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. Verse 22, I saw no temple, for the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. The earthly temple was a symbol of who God was and is. It represented God's presence with us. We now get the fullness of that in the eighth day, the cosmic day, the age to come, in which God is with us. The temple, his dwelling presence, it's him. He's with us in the fullest sense. There's no need for a structure for him to go in. He is our God with us in a way that we've never, ever, ever could comprehend. Oh, what a day. Verse 23, and the city has no need of the sun or of the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God has illuminated it, and its lamp is the Lamb. Who's the Lamb? Jesus, Son of God, Son of Man. Jesus the Jew. He's called the light of God. John says the light of God comes into the world and enlightens the heart of every man and every woman. Think about that. Jesus, he's the light of God. Light is a metaphor for revelation. He's the revelation of the Father. Jesus came to reveal the Father. It says that when he comes into the world, he enlightens the heart of every man and every woman. What does that imply? That every man and every woman will have encountered Yeshua in their life at some point. Without exception, every human being. And then every human being will have to answer for what they did with that light, the light of God. Every human being is going to be judged based on what they did with the light of God. Did they embrace the light of God, or did they reject the light of God? This is the gospel in John. He has come into the world and has lit up the hearts of every person. Now the light in the age to come will shine The very brilliance of Messiah will shine in its strength and illuminate the eternal city of God. He is the light of God. Verse 24, the nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. You tracking with me? We got Jews. We got a Jewish city, Israel, the 12 tribes, and we also have Gentiles. We also have Gentiles. Why? Because the age to come is, in fact, this age glorified and immortalized. Same God, same Messiah, same people groups. None of that is lost. If it was, we wouldn't recognize each other. What do you think you're going to be? Do you think when we all get there, we're all going to be Jewish or all going to be non-Jewish? No, we're going to be who we are now. That's not going to change. You'll recognize me. I'll recognize you. We'll be immortalized, glorified, but we're still going to be who we are. I'm still going to have my Scott Irish heritage, my Spanish heritage, right? We are who we are. We're just immortalized and glorified. This is amazing to see it. The nations, the goyim, the Gentiles will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. One big, glorious, transformational, eternal makeover. It's called the eighth day. Are you ready? I'm ready. I can't wait. Verse 25, in the daytime, for there will be no nighttime there, its gates will never be closed. Always open, always accessible. We'll go in and out of the New Jerusalem forever. We'll traverse the new creation. We'll gather together. We'll meet for worship times. We'll bring the glory of the nations into the New Jerusalem. Yeah, it's going to be so breathtakingly beautiful and wonderful. Verse 26, and they, speaking of the Gentiles, they will bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. Nations. The same nations that are here today will be there in the future. The same Israel here today will be there in the future. The same ethnic groups will be there in the future. They will still represent their origins. None of us are saved based on our ethnic status. We're saved based on grace through faith. But that salvation does not erase our ethnic origins. If it did, then this life really has no traction with that life, and so what's the purpose? But if everything moves forward into this life, it has great traction, which means this life has great purpose and meaning. What matters is not ethnic status. What matters is that Jews and Gentiles together in Messiah keep the commandments of God. That's what matters. Be comfortable with your origins. Those are secondary issues, important but secondary. What matters is that you represent your people groups through faith in Jesus by keeping covenant, the commandments of God. Verse 27, nothing unclean and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. If your name isn't in the Lamb's Book of Life and it only gets there through faith in the Lamb, then you're thrown out with all of these others who too are unclean, who are full of abominations and lying. They have no atonement for their sins. Because they've neglected or rejected the Lamb of God slain for their own sins, they will never enter the eternal city. Why? Because they're being gathered up. They're going to be cast into the lake of fire. There they will be consumed by the unquenchable, white-hot fire of God's judgment. And both their bodies and their souls will be destroyed and consumed. This is the second and permanent death, annihilation, an eternal non-existence. It is a damnation that is final and irreversible. Make sure you're in. Make sure you're saved. Make sure your trust is in Yeshua the Messiah, and you're going to be so happy and so thankful. You won't even have words to describe it. You play games and neglect and put that off. What a horrifying day that'll be. So in conclusion, this holy week called Sukkot Tabernacles is a memorial to God's promise to Moses that he would come and dwell with us, his people, in the midst of us. And we saw this when he commanded Israel to build him a big sukkah, a big tabernacle, and then put it in the middle of all their little sukkahs as he traversed with them through the wilderness for 40 years. In that tough time of chastisement, he was with his people. Why? God says, from the beginning, I'm going to dwell in the midst of my people. I love my people. I'm going to be with them in the good times. I'm going to be with them in the bad times. And then he said to Moses, make sure you tell them to celebrate this every year by the native born in Israel, building sukkahs and living in them for 7 days, because I want them to be reminded year in and year out that I, the Lord, their God, dwells in their midst. I'm with my people. Our sukkahs that we build are symbols to that promise that God dwells in our midst. The symbol is important. You don't think so? Take your ring off and tell your wife you're not wearing it anymore. It's just a symbol. See how well that works. The symbol is very important. It's very important. It reminds us that God said he would dwell with us. And not only did he dwell with us, but later he dwelt in the temple. And then later, in and through his son, as his son tabernacled with us in human flesh and blood. And then we'll see the final consummation of this holy day that we're celebrating today, this week. We'll see the fullness and consummation of this promise when we transition from the seventh day, the cosmic seventh day of creation, to the cosmic eighth day of creation called the final age or the eternal age. It is on and in the eighth day that God will create once again. It's this time in the eighth day that he creates a perfect, not a good, but a perfect creation. Remember Genesis 1? He stepped back and he said, behold, it's good. This time he'll step back and say, behold, it's perfect. He made the first one in light of our fall. He knew we were going to fall, so he made a universe specifically tailored for a sinful humanity to hem them in, to keep sin encumbered and entrenched so that he could deal with it and do away with it. In the new creation, all of that changes because we too are perfected. Yeah, it goes from it was good to it is perfect, glorified, and indestructible. A new created heavens and earth. It is the newly created earth that we will live on and in forever with our God. We're not going to want to miss it. This, the new earth, and not heaven, is the final destination of the believer. Let me say that again. Listen to this. It's the new earth and not heaven that is the final destination of the believer. The plan of God was never, you're going to die and then you get to go to heaven. That was never the plan of God. You think that's the goal of redemption? You get to die and go to heaven? The traditional Christian, naked on a cloud, playing a harp, in heaven idea is the byproduct of a religion unhinged from its Jewish roots. No, the eschatological, messianic Jewish view of living on and in a recreated, glorified, and immortalized new earth is found in and revealed through the holy week of Sukkot, of Tabernacles, with its eighth day observance. See, once the church says the holy days are not important, we'll create new ones which are syncretized with Roman paganism, it lost these revelations. Then it comes up with this idea that you die and go to heaven, and that's the goal. And you're naked on a cloud playing a harp. How boring is that? It was lost because they rejected these holy days. The holy days teach us something different, that heaven is an interim. It's the place we go from the period of time that we die until he comes again. But when he comes again, there's a new creation, an eighth day, and we're going to live in a new earth, on and in a new earth with him forever and ever. That's the goal. That's what's revealed in the eighth day of Sukkot. In the words of N.T. Wright, let me see if I don't butcher this quote. N.T. Wright, quote, "Don't get me wrong. Heaven is great, but it's not the end of the world." Isn't that a great quote? It's not the end of the world. And I want to add to N.T. Wright's insight here. It's not just a new world, but one with the glorious, eternal, indestructible, and profoundly Jewish city of God, the New Jerusalem, with its 12 Jewish gates. This is where we'll dwell on earth, with heaven coming down and joining us in the new city, the New Jerusalem. So again, we have a new world coming in the new heavens, the new earth, and the New Jerusalem, all foreseen in the Holy Week of Tabernacles. And the eighth day reveals this eschatological goal. This is why we, as Messianic Jews and Messianic Gentiles, keep the holy days of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They reveal and memorialize the great plan of God wanting to save humanity through Jesus, the Lamb of God, who is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. The holy days are all initially fulfilled in Jesus. He didn't fulfill the spring holy days, then he's coming back to fulfill the fall holy days. He came and fulfilled all the holy days. He inaugurated and gave an initial fulfillment to all of them in his first coming. And when he comes again, he's going to bring all of those initial fulfillments into the consummate fulfillments. We'll talk more about this on Monday. I'll show you how the new creation was already inaugurated 2,000 years ago. The new creation that's coming has already broken into our past. It's not consummated. It's inaugurated in Jesus. That's why we keep these days. They're all about Jesus, the revelation of God, and what he's going to do. When you kick out the holy days, you miss out on so much of who Jesus is and what he's done and what's coming for us in the future. This is a call to return to God's calendar, the holy days of the Lord our God. So teach your children well. If they're not engaged through the holy days of God, their view of Jesus, of salvation, and what is truly important for their lives will be diminished and skewed. So here's the word of the Lord to you. I have a word for you today. I sense the Father saying, I sense strongly the Father saying, of your children, listen, if you love them, you will teach them my commandments. You write that down. If you love your children, you'll teach them to keep my commandments. This applies to physical children as well as to spiritual children that you are discipling. So make room for your God and King by setting aside and making his holy days a priority for you, your family, in your community. Chag Sameach. Shabbat Shalom.
And Yahweh spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, 'This is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, May Yahweh bless you and keep you. May Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.' And we add, 'In the name of Yeshua our Messiah, the Prince of Peace, so they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them.' Receive now the name of Yahweh."
Yivarechecha Yahweh ve'yishmerecha. Yaher Yahweh panav alecha ve'yihunecha. Yisei Yahweh panav alecha Vayasem lecha shalom.
B'shem Yeshua HaMashiach, Sar HaShalom, Shabbat Shalom.